No, I'm sure like me, you were shocked to wake up this morning to the news of the sad passing of one of the icons of modern music, David Bowie. And here to talk to me first off on the programme this morning about his standing in the music business and the impact he had on so many people and so many artists are Johnny Hero and Stuart Bailey. Morning, Stuart. Morning, Johnny.
Hi. Morning.
Johnny, if I can start with you, you know, front man with Glam Slam, Bowie had a bit of that in the 70s, but overall, a man who was a bit of a musical chameleon, changed repeatedly, always ahead of the game. How do you rate him?
Oh, Bowie, I mean, there'll never be anybody like Bowie again, never. And basically because today's music industry wouldn't suffer it. I mean, now the music is so formulaic. You've got your standard dance sound, rock sound, pop. It's off an assembly line. But Bowie never fitted into any of that and wasn't afraid to take risks. You know, it was just, nobody will ever do that again.
Would you agree with that, Stuart?
Absolutely. You know, the Beatles more or less gave up in 69, 70. Huge hole in popular music. Bob Dylan had gone kind of doolally. And David Bowie stepped in and showed everybody how to do it. And every record, and you were getting a David Bowie record once, maybe twice a year. And every time there was a new image, there was a new sound, there was a new way of kind of approaching the world. And you kind of desperately, you were inspired to try and kind of catch up to find out what he was reading, what he was understanding. He was doing these incredible films like The Man Who Fell to Earth. He just lived in this accelerated world, and when we were all kind of agape every time he kind of came out with something.
Yeah, Johnny, he started really in 69, and we're thinking about Space Oddity, and that in itself bucked all the trends, because in those days singles were 3 minutes long and as upbeat as possible. Here was a song that took a long time to build and was over 5 minutes long.
That's right. Of course, he was accused at the time of cashing in on the Apollo missions, because that's when the moon landings and all happened. But he had been going for a few years before that. And the striking thing about the early stuff, it was quite ordinary. It was when the first solo album came out, Space Oddity, then you could see Bowie ploughing his own furrow and doing his own thing. And then with Hunky Dory and Ziggy, it became obvious we're dealing with something special here, you know. He was just doing stuff no one else was.
Absolutely so. And he got away, Stuart, with certain things which would have been dubbed as naff had anyone else done them. But when it was David Bowie doing the Laughing Gnome, everybody thought, oh, charming.
Well, it was kind of the early days when he was really trying to find his feet, and he was messing around with music hall, and he was listening to quaint singers like Anthony Newley, and it took a little while before Bowie found the mask that fitted, and Space Oddity was the one that kind of did it. Hunky Dory and The Man Who Sold the World, where he was wearing a dress on the cover, kind of got us there. And then Ziggy Stardust, 1972, you went, what is that about? That was just outrageous, creating this whole mythology, this alternative person. And I don't think we ever got to know who David Bowie was after that, really. Certainly for 15, 20 years, he became these different personae. And that was amazing because it gave him a lot of freedom, and it allowed his creativity just to completely flow.
Yeah, well, I mean, when he did the Let's Dance album with Nile Rodgers and so forth in New York, I mean, it was almost like saying, hey, this is where it's at. Well, here's the definitive album.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, you know, you want a pop song? I'll give you a pop song, but it'll be the stranger than any other pop song you've ever heard. You remember that old song Iggy Pop did called China Girl? Well, let's go back there and make it even more astonishing. And it's just great, you know. And you look at the kind of the people who followed in. You know, you look at someone like Bono, who has tried so many times to kind of wear some of David Bowie's old cast-offs. you listen to a band like New Order or Joy Division, who just followed in from what he was doing with records like Low and Heroes. There's been whole genres of music inspired by one or two David Bowie albums, and then all of a sudden he's off and then into the next chapter. You know, you could never be ahead of him. You could never second guess him. And the album that he released a few days ago, Black Star, was just great.
Yeah, and that's sort of tipping his hat to some sort of jazz format stuff, isn't it?
Messing around with jazz and strange lyrical ideas. And, you know, you look at that Lazarus video now, and the very last seconds he disappears in the cupboard and closes the door, and it breaks your heart. You know, that was, in a sense, he must have been knowing that he was saying his goodbyes.
Yeah.
You know, there were rumours of ill health, but nobody quite understood kind of, you know, how ill he was. And right to the end, he was putting out these beautiful, adventurous records.
And that one only released last Friday, too, you know.
Yeah, incredible.
Johnny, one of the bands that he influenced big time were Roxy Music, and with your connection with Glam Slam and the like, all that stuff must have come into your thinking as well.
Okay, I mean, for me and my whole circle of friends, I suppose, and I mean, Stuart would be the same. In the early 70s, Bowie was just everything. And especially me in Belfast, I mean, I always make a lot of how important music was to people in Northern Ireland, because there were horrible things going on outside. You know, life wasn't great. There wasn't much of a social life in the 70s, but certainly for me, I could go home, draw the curtains, and put on my Bowie albums, and I was transported, and I really mean that. You know, it was really important to me. And when I think now about trying to go through those teenage years now without having Bowie to listen to, I wouldn't have fancied it, to be honest. You know, it's really that important. And as Stuart says, because he constantly kept reinventing himself, when there was a new Bowie album coming out, it wasn't like, oh, there's a, you know, new album by bog standard pop star. The anticipation was massive. You didn't know what you were going to get. It was real excitement getting the album and running home. And then, what did you think of that? What do you make of it? You know, and by the time other artists caught up to mimic him, he moved on. He'd gone saying, I've done that. You know, let's do the next thing. You know, it's a kind of imagination I don't think exists anymore.
I mean, even when he did an album of covers, the Pin-Ups album, all the talk was, well, I wonder what songs he's going to cover.
Yeah, and it was a terrific album. And other artists have tried to do cover albums that have failed miserably. They've come across, like, you know, Cash In for the Mommies to Buy at Christmas kind of things. But Bowie reinterpreted a lot of great songs. And, you know, it's as if he says, everyone has a go at a tribute album, but here's how it should be done. And then he moved on to the next one. It was, you know, again, I can't stress enough, just no one else, I can't think of anybody in the music world at the moment could even attempt to try and do what Bowie did.
No. Stuart, did you have a favourite period?
Well, I must admit, I started going to growing up school in 74, and I remember walking into school and somebody walking past me with Diamond Dogs by David Bowie. And I don't know if you remember that sleeve, but the bottom half of him, he's got these dog's legs and various other bits.
Yeah.
And I was just, it blew my mind. And the music was mind-blowing. He was listening, you know, he was reading George Orwell's 1984 and creating this future world. And so Diamond Dogs, I have a great affection for Young Americans. When he'd almost finished with glam, and he went, I'm going to do this other thing like Plastic Soul. And for, you know, it sort of sounds throwaway, but, you know, you play Young Americans, even in a wee club in Belfast, and everybody's going to get up on their feet and dance because it's so joyous and so beautiful, and the saxophone and everything. So, you know, I could talk to you about three or four records, Low as well, where he basically went, let's have a go at electronic music and let's change how people approach how drums are recorded and all of that stuff, and let's listen to Sound Invasion. Just majestic, you know, and for the next 50, 60, 100 years, people are still going to be picking over those things going, what did he mean there? How can we match that? How can we live up to that challenge, you know?
I mean, it is an incredible body of work, Stuart, isn't it?
It is. Somebody said earlier today, says David Jones is dead, but David Bowie lives on. And in a sense, he's right, because he just is part of culture, and endlessly fascinating. You'll never get to the bottom of what he was about. You'll never quite understand it. You'll never quite have the magnificent mind that he had that could take it all in. You can only flail around in the dark and you get what you can. But you know, every 9 months in the 70s, he changed how I looked at the world and millions of other people as well. Like, what a legacy.
Well, that's the music, Johnny, but there's also a fashion legacy, isn't there?
Well, yeah, you know, again, he wasn't afraid to just see a look that he liked, and then he walked about with it. Most people would be maybe trying to worry about being conformist and fitting in with what the media were portraying as stylish or in vogue, and boy, just ripped up the rule book. I'm wearing this because I like it. And he tied it in with his acting, and boy, he was into dance, and he was famously into mime for years. He studied mime, and he just there were so many different facets, you know, especially in the acting business. I mean, he once famously performed The Elephant Man on Broadway and received critical acclaim for that. But, you know, not a lot of people will focus on that. They'll focus on the music, but he was just so talented in every area that he chose to dabble in, you know.
Yeah, one of the old-style music biz guys who I know in London always recalls back in the day, pre-Space Oddity, whenever he was experimenting with this and that, Bowie lived in an old ambulance outside their office. You know, it's funny how the music business and the talent, once it out, absolutely turns it from rags to riches, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's strange. In today's market, if Bowie was coming through, he'd be up like, you know, there'd be a panel of so-called experts on one of these talent shows saying, no, son, you're too left field, you can't make it. You know, yeah. That's the pity about today's music.
Yeah. Sturdy, do you find that as well about today's music?
I think he created an energy around him, and I think there was generally a very adventurous mood around the early 70s, and he exploited it to the full. I don't think there's been anyone comparable since that has just been able to lift so many ideas and hurl them around. I think you get one of those a generation if you're very lucky. You know, we live in a fairly bland place at the minute, and you know, the people I grew up with who were listening to David Bowie, within 2-3 years you could see them all forming punk bands. You know, he gave them the green light to be artistic and to be experimental, and you know, those are the guys who got the strange haircuts and who started wearing pleated pants and plastic sandals and mohair jumpers and all the rest of it. And I'm just incredibly grateful that I lived through those moments, walking past the gramophone shop every time there was a new David Bowie record, and the whole front window was full of these images from Aladdin Sane or whatever other album it was. You know, it was just so inspiring.
It was, and I mean, it also was a gift for the people who dressed the windows, wasn't it?
It was. It was just like, okay, you know, this is talent, you know, this is what it's about. You know, you can always tell a David Bowie fan from an ABBA fan or an ELO fan, you know, the way they walked down the street, the way they had their hair cut. It was just, it's something about them that when he inspired someone, that they were never the same again.
In terms of being an icon, is he up there with the Elvises and the Beatles of this world?
I think so. I think he's definitely top 10. He's probably top 5. You know, the Beatles changed everything. Bob Dylan was the template for that mercurial, every 6 months you're going to do another career swerve. And David Bowie understood all of that. You know, you would put him above all the Neil Youngs and the U2s and all of that, because he absolutely was unique to his own place, you know, and absolutely nothing that would go there, really.
Johnny, do you see him up there as being an icon on the same level as Elvis and the Beatles?
Oh, listen, definitely, Ivan. The fact that we're discussing a career that really kicked off in the 60s and still going through his new album there last Friday. You know, that speaks for itself. It's not like we're talking about a man who last had a hit 20, 30 years ago. He was still making relevant music and still challenging perceptions and, you know, pushing back the borders. I mean, that alone would tell you the magnitude of the man's achievement. And for me, it would be the top, seriously. No doubt others have their own favourites.
Sure.
Again, I take myself back just to the personal experience of I'm in the room, close the door, put on my Bowie albums, and you just immerse yourself in it. And there aren't many artists you can do that with.
And is that your best memory of Bowie?
It is, yeah. And best and worst memories are lending albums out to my mates and getting them back scratched and then having to go and get another copy. But again, that was the thing. If you got the new Bowie album first, you know, your mates were going to come around and try and listen to it or borrow it off you or whatever. But as I say, when Bowie released an album, it was an event. As Stuart says, shops around the town thought nothing of giving over all their advertising space to the new Bowie album because they just knew of the man's attraction. You know, they knew how much he meant.
It's interesting that, you know, the music business is controlled by marketing people. And one of their prime things is that they want to pigeonhole everybody. He's rock, he's pop, he's punk, he's soul or whatever. But Bowie was the master of marketing in his own way and impossible to pigeonhole.
Well, then that's why I say it would be a challenge for an artist like Bowie to come through now because it's become so tunnel vision. The record industry now. They do want to put you in a pigeonhole right away so then they can hand you to their marketing department and say, here's the new pop act. Market them to 12-year-old girls, you know, or here's a new folk act or here's a new indie act. Whereas Bowie could happily have embraced any genre. And the bigger point is he could have embraced any genre and been the best at it.
Yes.
And then moved on, you know, tackle something else.
As he proved time and again. Stuart, your best memory of Bowie?
I think I remember the first time I listened to Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and it was you would always read all the sleeve notes for clues or ideas because you just thought he knew everything. And there was a line in it said something like, to be played at maximum volume. And of course, me and the mate Jimmy played it, you know, to ear-splitting volume because we thought there were little secrets between the tracks where he explained what it all meant.
Yeah.
So we were like behind our heads at the speakers trying to understand the clues that would explain this magnificent record. And, you know, I still love that idea that he's been gifted to us from some other planet. And for a little while, we watched this alien in our midst doing this incredible stuff. But Ziggy Stardust, what a right, outrageously great record.
Did you rate him as a live performer, Stuart?
I saw him a few times, mostly sort of later years, and he was still very good. But you watch him when he was in full Ziggy mode, or you even watch him when he was working up that Young Americans kind of plastic soul stuff. And he just had it, and as Johnny said, you know, he did mime, he understood theatre. He understood literature, he understood fashion and couture, and he just wrapped it all up, you know, effortless almost, you know, while leading he lived 1,000 miles an hour, and the lifestyle that would just kill us all in a day, and still put out the records, still made his films, and still blew our minds.
And always ahead of the game, wasn't he?
Absolutely, you know, right up. You know, later, you know, he started messing around with drum and bass and stuff, and you're kind of going, well, it's a wee bit mutton dressed as lamb. But even when he was doing that, you know, some of those songs and tunes were very good. But, you know, until 1985, he was faultless. And after that, he was still incredibly good.
Stuart Bailey from the Oh Yes Centre, thanks for joining me this morning to share those reminiscences of a great man, David Bowie. Thanks, Stuart.
Thanks, Ivan.
Cheers. Johnny, did you see Bowie live?
I did. The last time I saw him was the King's Hall in Belfast, and I thought it was terrific. Now, I do remember some naysayers saying, oh, didn't know that song. Then my thoughts were, what were you doing at a David Bowie gig if you didn't know half the songs? You know, I thought he was terrific. And again, the thing about Bowie, when Bowie announced a tour, there was a whole package, because Bowie was at the forefront of developing props and a whole stage set, you know, to deliver his latest album. You know, they're he always developed a theme, and it was a big theatrical thing. It wasn't just stick a band on the stage and a few lights, like most other bands did. There was a whole production went into it. And again, it was Bowie's love of theatre and acting and everything else. And he played a part on the stage. It wasn't just David Bowie singing his songs. You could see he was playing a role on stage. And again, terrific. Absolutely terrific.
Well, Johnny, thanks for coming on and sharing your memories of Bowie. And we'll see you later in the day, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye. Johnny Hero. And Johnny, of course, on air at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Johnny and Stuart Bailey sharing some memories of David Bowie.